Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us for the very first time is Jay Jacobs, who is the Nassau County Democratic Chairman, and he is also the chairman of the New York State Democratic Committee. He was first elected to the position in Nassau County in October of 2001. He has been appointed by the governor twice. He served two terms as the New York State Democratic Committee chairman. He served from 2009 to 2012 and also returned in 2019. Thank you for coming on Reaching Out, Jay.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, I've heard your name for a long time. I've seen you in rooms. You were always busy because, hey, look, when you're in charge, you're busy. Yeah. But it's glad to have you on the show on one-on-one talking to you.
Great. Well, I'm never too busy.
Okay. Now, the first question we have for you is the American public has become increasingly frustrated with the partisan gridlock that has seemed to plague Washington, D.C. How can legislators and elected officials in all levels of government begin to reach across the aisle to produce meaningful legislation that would benefit the American public?
Well, you know, first things first, I think we have to all remember that we're Americans. No matter what philosophy we have, no matter what party we're a member of, we're first and foremost Americans. And, you know, I think that gets lost. I think we too often get into our corners and begin thinking about the fight more than we think about the outcome and what we want for our country. I'll tell you this. I talk to a lot of Republicans, and I hate to tell you this, but you know, some people get offended, but you know, the Republican Party is my second favorite party. So I have a lot of respect for the other side, and I would trust they would for our side too. And you know, we talk a lot about this country. Just in informal settings, not governmental settings. The interesting thing is, you know, we agree on so much more than we like to admit. And in terms of where the country should be, what the vision is for America, what the type of nation this is, Republicans and Democrats agree on an awful lot. Problem is with the 24-hour news cycle, with the demands of fundraising, with gerrymandering, with all of these other things, we've lost the relationship part of what politics always used to be. So it's so much more difficult now for people to figure out ways to get along and get together. You know, if you come to agreement, if you have a compromise, the folks on the left will complain that you're going, you're dealing with the devil. And the folks on the right are saying the same thing. And the truth of the matter is this whole country and all of our progress has always been built on compromise, built on two sides coming together and figuring out where the middle ought to lie.
Well, you know, that's an interesting concept of what you just came up with. I equate it to two analogies. One is a piece of pie, a whole pie. Mm-hmm. Now, the pie has all sides, but the crust, whoever wants the crust is the stuff that you burn off the edges. So if you're on the right or left, the crust is what you cut off. Everybody wants the sweet spot, which is in the middle. Mm-hmm. And baseball analogy, you can't hit a ball off the end of the bat and have it go anywhere on either end. If you hit it on the bottom, you're in trouble because you're hitting your hand. Hit it on the top, it's just not going to go anywhere. So you want the sweet spot in the middle. So politics and our government should be just like that. The sweet spot's in the middle. Everybody used to compromise. We meet in the middle. And a good negotiation is nobody got everything they wanted. Somebody got something.
That's right. And I think it always starts with respect. I think first and foremost, I hear too many people on both sides yelling at each other. And screaming and angry. You know something? I think when you start with anger, you're never going to get anywhere. I think you got to listen, try to understand. Yeah, we won't agree on everything, but try to see somebody else's perspective, and then let's figure out how we fashion something that moves us forward.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great. This is coming from the New York State Democratic Chairman. And I believe that is the best approach I've heard in years, going back to the way things used to be when we got things done. And a competent elected official on either side, on both sides, is always good, because when you have incompetency, you have chaos. Mm-hmm. So that's not taking anybody, pointing the finger at anybody, because I could point fingers on both sides at the same time right now, and then we got disaster. But I won't do that, and I won't name the people. With partisans viewing, compromising, and capitulating, is this even realistic?
Yeah, well, that's the problem today. You know, in the old days, you know, not only that old, I mean, just even a few decades ago, everything in Washington, and I would say in the state house as well, was built around the relationships you had, relationships with members of your own party and relationships with members of the other party. And those relationships, as I said before, were built on respect, but they actually had admiration to them. You know, Lyndon Johnson, who was the Senate Majority Leader in the 50s, he actually had a friendship with Everett Dirksen, who was the Republican Minority Leader. And they carried that all the way through to the time that he became the President of the United States and into the 60s. That relationship, that friendship, helped forge the Civil Rights Acts. Without it, it wouldn't have happened. And people don't really understand today the value of relationships, the value of that understanding that goes. So, look, yes, you've got the 24-hour news cycle. You've got the media that is on either side of the political spectrum, and people in the parties who are saying if you compromise, you have conceded, you're a traitor perhaps, there should be no compromise. Well, you know something? I read a study recently. It's called the Hidden Tribes Study. It was a broad poll of tens of thousands of Americans across the country. And what it found was just 11% of the public describes itself as being on the very far left. And 14% of the public describes itself as being on the very far right. That means that 75% of the people in this country are somewhere in the middle. Yeah, maybe middle left here and middle right there, but still the middle. This is a nation that tends to tack toward the center. And we've got to get back to dealing in ways that play to the center and not the far left or the far right, the extremes, because that's not where progress is going to be found.
Thus, the analogy of the pie, the crust is burnt on the outside. We're eating from the middle. What advice would you give to the current field of Democratic presidential candidates?
Well, I think that, you know, and it's a strong group of individuals, and I respect each and every one of them. But I think you have to present to people a vision. Let's look at this country right now, and let's look at where we are and how we got here. Instead of looking to who the villains are, because I don't want to point out any villains. I just want to point out the situation and where we're at. You've got people in this country who've lost hope. You've got people who are just eking by and making ends meet, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. You've got people who don't know, you know, if they're going to be able to survive tomorrow, if they're going to have a house over their head, a roof over their head, you know. So there's a lot of fear out in the general public. Not everybody is living it up like, you know, many of us here on the East Coast and the West Coast. You've got the center of America that's got real problems. But there are solutions to those problems. There has never been a problem this country has faced that we have not been able to overcome when we come together. And I think we can do that. So what I would advise to these candidates running for president today is let's talk a little bit less about the demons and the villains, and let's talk a little bit more about hope and opportunity and a vision for the future that describes an America and defines an America that we will make this country into, that they can look at and say, that's a place I want to live in. That's a place that takes care of me, my children, my parents, my grandparents. And it's a place that, you know, cares for us while at the same time helps us build on the great opportunity that America has always been about. This country has always been a place that has that has prospered, built on the American dream and people's capacity to do anything that was in their capacity and to do anything that was possible. And they've built great things, you know, with that kind of philosophy. So we've got to bring that back, create that vision, give people hope, talk about opportunity. And I think that's what they'll be buying.
Now, I heard some of the candidates come out with their plan on health care. Once again, I'm not going to mention any names, mm-hmm. but I'm going to mention one name, Tim Ryan. Mm-hmm. Tim Ryan was right when he said the unions do not want their negotiated health care taken away from them. He was so right with that. And I think a lot of the candidates in that race didn't understand what he was talking about. If you have 70% of the American people liking their health coverage, have good health coverage, that's a great thing, because you only have to deal with the 30% that don't that does not have health coverage. And there's no way you're going to be able to give people the same coverage that people are paying for. It's like buying a car. Some of us buy new cars. Some of us buy luxury cars. Some of us buy used cars. But we all buy the cars. Some of us use bicycles. But we get around. So you don't have to have a complex health coverage plan for those who don't have coverage. If you start with the basic coverage that everyone has a doctor, everyone has preventive medicine, health care will get better for all. You don't have to fix everything all at once. You have to give some people something. And you don't have to take away health coverage and try to dismantle health care companies and go through this whole rigorous plan that people are going to fight you over and maybe not even elect you to do.
Right. Well, I agree with you. Now, you know, I favor the idea of Medicare for all who want it. And I think that that's really the more centrist approach. And it kind of comes along the lines, I think it's the successor to Obamacare. And I agree with you. There are 156 million Americans today that have health insurance that they like and they want to keep. And I don't think it's smart politics to be telling them, I'm sorry, we're smarter than you, and we're going to find something that's going to be better for you because we know better. That never sells in the United States of America, and it won't sell. And so I agree with you on that. I think that it's simple. Look, let's not get bogged down in the details of policy. Let's focus on principle. And these are the principles. We want health care that is affordable. We want it universal. That means everybody gets it. And we want it to be excellent quality. And you take those three principles, and if your plan meets that, then that's perfect. But the details, we'll get to the details. That's like sausage making. You know, Yes. That's going to happen in the halls of Congress late at night, and it won't be pretty. No. And hopefully they'll come out with something that'll meet those three principles.
We may like the way it cooks and tastes, but we won't like the way it looks before
you don't
we
see
get
it
there.
No,
no. You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237. Teamsters, with me, our very special guest is Jay Jacobs, who is the chairman of the New York State Democratic Committee. By the way, I just wanted to say, because I'm going across the bridges in New York, traveling, and the bridges look lovely. The governor of this state has done a great job, very quietly, not getting any credit, not even taking credit, for the remodeling of several bridges and tunnels across New York State. And I got to say, the finished product is looking very good. Infrastructure.
Not only doesn't he get the credit, but he takes a beating sometimes. I got to tell you something. This governor has done more for infrastructure in New York State than any governor in recent history. You got to take a look upstate what's going on. It's not just down here in the city. It's not just what's going to be happening with the new Penn Station that's taking place, or LaGuardia Airport, Kennedy Airport, the Kosciuszko Bridge, the old Tappan Zee Bridge was now the Mayor Cuomo Bridge. You name it. Then you go upstate and you look at Syracuse Airport and you go all through Buffalo. The Buffalo Billions that's been so much talked about has really produced phenomenal successes in the Buffalo area, in Erie County and the rest. So, you know, a lot's getting done. I don't think he gets enough credit for it. As I say, he takes a beating over things from time to time. But, you know, I think the proof's in the pudding. Just take a look.
Yeah, he has the two airports here in New York City, LaGuardia, which is a mess now, but hey, I'm waiting for the finished product. They have a lot of construction over there. Right. And also JFK, a lot of construction over there. So, I mean, he's not talking about it. He's actually doing it. There's a lot of infrastructure
going on. He gets it done.
And that creates jobs.
Yep.
There's a lot of jobs in New York State. So I don't know how he's able to do all these things at once, all these balls he has in the air, but he deserves a lot of credit for it. And Governor Cuomo, we invite you on Reaching Out to tell us how you did it. You have been on record saying that Donald Trump is not the problem, but rather a symptom of the problem. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. Obviously, I'm no fan of President Trump. But, you know, I look at sometimes the country gets the candidate that it deserves, you know. And the times may have required this, as painful as that is for me to face. I was a Hillary supporter, and I still am. I mean, I like her an awful lot. I know her personally, and I know, you know, I've heard a lot of negatives about her. But when you know her personally, then you have a different view. And I'll tell you this about President Trump. I think, you know, what he has been able to do is tap into I think the sorry state of the psyche of the American public. He's been able to divide us. He's been able to create the enemy, the demon here that get people to look at and I think he's created an environment that just is not good for the country. But it didn't start with Donald Trump. These things were brewing underneath. The economy that was getting better under Barack Obama wasn't getting better for everybody. The collection of wealth in the hands of very few people, all the money, the income that has been produced, being given to the beneficiary, to the people at the very high end of the income strata, that's not a good thing. And people resent that. You came off the crisis in Wall Street in 2008, 2009. Nobody went to jail. Mortgage crisis, people lost their homes. Hundreds of thousands, millions of people lost their homes. So who got punished?
Prosecuted.
Yeah, who got punished? Yeah. People resent those things. And those resentments last. People losing their jobs in the new world economy. That's nobody's fault. This is where the economy is going. There's no stopping it. But who is taking account of the people whose jobs are lost, and where's the hope? When people lose hope, they look to leaders like Donald Trump, who, although they're not giving them the real answers, in their anger, in the resentment that they inspire, they are feeding the beast, if you will. So the problem really is economic. It's not just that the country needs to grow and do better economically. We need to figure out how more people do better. We need to spread that wealth. We need to spread the benefits of the increases in productivity. And we need to figure out how we make up for lost jobs, lost manufacturing jobs that have gone elsewhere. You know, saying that, you know, the companies that bring their jobs down to Central American countries or Asian countries or what have you, that they're the demons. No, that's an economy. That's been going on forever. It will continue to go on. There's not much you're going to be able to do about that. But there is something you can do about the loss of jobs here in this country in terms of incenting people to be retrained, to building, giving advantages to companies to stay here, financial advantages to them, and to encourage just a broader training through community colleges and a college system and even the vocational system to provide other opportunities for people. They're here. This whole business about the green economy and about getting off of carbons, which are so bad for global warming, climate change and the like, and retrofitting some of our buildings, putting solar systems and solar panels. Those are all things that are going to be American made. And you know who's going to be putting those solar panels on those buildings? American workers. You can't outsource that. So if we put our money in the right places, put our attention in the right places, set our priorities to the right places, then we'll be able to fix this economy and move it forward in a way that is not all about finding out who the demon is or the villain or blaming the immigrant, you know, who tries to cross the border in search of a better life. Look, a lot of problems we've got, and there are a lot of ways to solve them. You know, I look at looking at the whole equation broadly. Let's take a look at immigration for a second.
Yes.
Okay. So the president, you know, is big on this wall. And I speak to a lot of decent people. They're not racists. These are not mean-spirited people. They just don't like the idea that you've got all of these folks trying to get into our country illegally, you know, or undocumented, however you want to put it. And it angers them. And what's the solution? And I don't feel a solution is a wall. Here's what I would suggest. You got a problem with the Chinese? Think about this for a second, and I'll get to the point. Mm-hmm. And so you're putting in these tariffs. It's hurting the farmers and all the rest of it. Well, the Chinese are getting a lot of low-wage workers to do a lot of the manufacturing work we no longer do in this country. Got an immigration problem on the southern border. What do they have to do with one another? Let me tell you. So instead of spending all this money on a wall, why don't we take the money and spend it in Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Panama, the countries where they've got gangs and crime and no hope and no income, and incentivize companies instead to move their factories from far away China, all right, who hasn't been a friend of ours, yeah. move them down there.
Uh-huh.
Build enclaves that are safe so yeah. people can live without threat of gang violence uh-huh. and have jobs that have decent paying wages. They won't be making their way through Mexico and banging on our doors at our border. And at the same time, you'll be punishing China in a way that doesn't hurt our farmers, all right, but helps our nation's policy. Solve one problem by taking care of another problem. Two birds.
With one stone.
One stone.
That's a very good idea. As a matter of fact, this is the first time I heard it. I understand it. I can conceptualize it.
And I just made it up.
It works. You just made it up.
There you go.
Well, look, you got somebody running. Somebody, you just whisper it to the—
Well, maybe they're listening to your show, and they'll hear that idea, and they'll
maybe
take
they
it.
Will. We have to send it to them. But, you okay. know, people don't like to take credit for somebody else's ideas unless it's a real good one, but people don't like to implement it. But that's a very good idea. Because unless you deal with the problem before they get to the border,
right.
you have the problem at the border, right. and no wall.
Right. Well, it's like kind of like
going to keep them out.
It's like what happened with drugs. You know, the answer to drugs was just put everybody in jail, but that didn't solve the problem,
no,
did it?
It did
so
not.
You got to go to the root of it
yes.
and try to solve it at the root. That doesn't mean that, listen, doesn't fix everything.
No.
There's no solution is 100%, but it's a heck of a lot better than where we're at.
But you minimize your problem.
Right.
And then the Border Patrol and ICE and everybody else can deal with the few and the less immigrants they have to run around and chase. And then,
right.
and then you know, the manufacturing gets better. And then you have China. You put China on notice because they're going to lose the factories and the jobs. And now they're going to start behaving themselves.
Right.
Because I just saw today on TV what they just did to the NBA. They said the NBA,
yeah, I saw that.
We're not going to, you spoke out against us, so we're not going to broadcast the games. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do that. But, you know, the people in China are used to watching basketball. So I don't know how long they're going to get away with telling the people in China that they can't have basketball and can't look at basketball because they love basketball.
And think about something else. Think about the profits that companies in America will gain from having lower transportation costs, moving their goods from Central America to the United States market, as mm-hmm. opposed to crossing the Pacific Ocean and getting them
right.
to the United States market. Cost savings would be dramatic. Profitability goes up. The incentives have a benefit. And you have, you know, taken care of a big part of your China problem.
I think you have the wrong job. I think you should be national, not just New York State.
Well, let's slow down here a little bit.
Oh no! I'm not talking about you taking Tom Perez's job. You should be national on some level, policy making, something else. Tom, don't get threatened.
That's right.
Okay,
he's a friend of mine.
No, I know he is. I just want him to, right now. I'm listening. Tom, don't get threatened. But he should have a national platform and give an idea. Some think tank. You should have your own think tank. That was a great idea.
Thank you.
We have 2 minutes, so let's talk about how the Democratic Party, especially in New York, can harness the energy of this new wave progressive activists' productivity without alienating or turning off the more moderate wing of the party. And we have about a minute and a half to answer that question.
Well, you know, I think the progressive wing, you know, I agree with some things and I disagree with others. I think they go a bit too far sometimes. But we need that. We need that energy. We need that passion. We need that push. You leave a moderate to their own devices, they'll only go so far just because, you know, change is a tough thing. And so they'll work in increments, marginal. The far left pushes us to reach a little bit further. And I think that benefits people. But we can't go too far because there are certain reforms and certain improvements that are good and some that cross the line. And that's where you have to, you know, find the balance and meet that. And look, you know, there are a lot of good ideas out there from a lot of different people. There are good ideas on the right too, you know. And we got to just take a look at them and listen to them and figure out which ones fit. And I think if we do that, you know, we'll be more successful as a country.
Thank you. And Jay, I want to say this discussion was very, very fruitful. I learned a lot, especially your idea on the border crisis. That's the best idea I've heard yet. On Border Patrol. It doesn't punish people. It solves two problems. It also helps America. So I want to thank you. And anytime you want to come back on Reaching Out, I'd be glad to have you on.
I'd love it. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest was New York State Chairman of the Democratic Party, Jay Jacobs. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.